This podcast is part of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts, visit red5network.com.
Welcome to the Unknown Regions, where a Star Wars-focused podcast brings you a variety of different content, such as the latest news, film, novel, and comic reviews, and connections with the people in the galaxy. This podcast aims to deliver fresh content to your comm link from the HoloNet. This is Star Wars by MRC Tech. Episode 21, everyone, and welcome to Star Wars by the MRC Tech. I am your host, Sean, and we are happy to have you as we travel through the unknown regions. We're recording on May 25th, and because we know your time is precious, we're going to be creating bite-sized portions of this podcast for you to enjoy over the course of the week. Normally a 60-minute plus episode, we're going to trim it down to 15 to 25-minute segments so you can listen while you wash the dishes, take the dog for a walk, or clean the cockpit. There's nothing more annoying than having a 90-minute podcast reset on you like one did on me today while listening to it in the car. It was a nightmare, so we're going to keep it nice and short for you. Star Wars by MRC Tech goes bite-size for the next few weeks, so sit back and enjoy the quick-hitting episode. Let's cover the agenda. There's going to be three segments on this week for episode 21, starting off with 21.1, the hyperspace spot. We've got big news. MRC Tech joins a squad. We talk about an age-old radio drama. There is more Mandalorian news on the horizon. We discuss a few rumors and a new patent from Disney. In episode 21.2, we finish out the Rise of Skywalker junior novel, the final changes and recap of that junior novel. We discuss the Disney Gallery episode 4, reactions to technology. And in our final segment for 21.3, special segment, ranking the films with special guest, the Ice Orb. So I'm looking forward to listening to that conversation. If you're new to the podcast or you need a reminder, you can support the podcast through donations using PayPal. Support the show so we can maintain equipment and bring even better content to you. Head on over to mrctechllc.com for more information. And if you like game streams or any live stream like the one you may be watching now, looking at you, Dave GT52, and Gingerbread Beauty, and Ginger Slayer. Come on out and join me as I play through a series of games or podcast live on Twitch, and follow the channel, like the Facebook page, follow the Instagram goodness, join the chat, and have fun. And if you ever want to leave a message for me, anything about the show, you have a question, if you have a comment that you want to be featured on the show, you can head on over to anchor.fm/StarWarsByTheMRCTech/message, which will be in the show notes. So make sure you check that out now. So without further ado, let's just introduce a special musical interlude as we transition to the next segment. My daughter Kate makes her debut on the podcast, probably for the second time, with her beautiful rendition of John Williams' Star Wars theme. I'm sure you picked up on it right away. But this will be our sort of segue into the first segment, 21.1, as we cover our hyperspace spot. So let's get to it. Ready? Punch it. Big news, Star Wars by the MRC Tech has joined the Red 5 Network. It's a collective of convivial content creators curated by @ScarifPodcast for an ever-positive Star Wars experience. Hashtag Red 5 Family, hashtag We Are Red 5. And I want to thank the guys over at Red 5, specifically Brad and Ro, for welcoming me in to the team and all the other podcasts out there. I'm going to get a list of your podcasts and make sure that I shout you out on the future podcasts of this Star Wars by the MRC Tech. So thank you for connecting with me, and thank you in the future for promoting and making sure that, you know, our little community is making it happen for everybody, so everybody's successful and positive and all that good stuff. So the Red 5 Network at Red 5 Network. And next up in the news, OpenCulture.com, the original Star Wars trilogy adapted into a 14-hour radio drama by NPR, 1981 to 1996. So let's take a gander. Let's read it. When it opened in 1977, Star Wars revived the old-fashioned swashbuckling adventure film. Within a few years, National Public Radio made a bet that it could do the same for the radio drama, though still well within living memory. The golden age of radio in America had ended decades earlier, and with it, the shows that once filled the airwaves with stories of every kind. Radio drama seemed extinct, but then before George Lucas' space opera turned blockbuster, so had movie serials like Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers. The episodic nature of such source material resonated with the similarly episodic nature of classic radio drama. And that must have brought within the realm of possibility a bold and near scandalous proposition to remake Star Wars for NPR. The idea came from a student at the University of California who suggested it to SC School of the Performing Arts dean and radio drama enthusiast Richard Towson. There could have been no institution better placed to take on such a project, since Towson had already produced dramas on the school's NPR-affiliated radio station KUSC. He made an ideal collaborator in the network's effort to breathe new life into its dramatic programming. And as Lucas's alma mater, USC, inspired in him a certain generosity, Lucas sold KUSC's Star Wars radio rights, along with the use of film's music and sound effects, for $1. Founded just a decade earlier, NPR still lacked the experience and resources to handle such an ambitious project itself, and so entered into a co-production deal with the BBC, which had never let radio drama go into eclipse. When the Star Wars radio drama was first broadcast in the spring of 81, fans of the movie would have heard a mixture of the familiar, including the voices of Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker and Anthony Daniels as C-3PO, and the unfamiliar with science fiction novelist Brian Daley brought on to add or restore scenes to the script of the original dialogue light feature film. This story stretches out to 13 episodes for a total runtime of 6 hours. The series thus stands as an early example of the expansion of the Star Wars universe that, in all kinds of media, has continued apace ever since. An Empire Strikes Back radio drama followed in 83, and Return of the Jedi followed in 96. You can hear all 14 hours of these original Star Wars trilogy radio dramas at the Internet Archive, Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back, blah, 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 or on YouTube playlists with fan edits combining the original discrete episodes into the continuous listening experiences. NPR's gamble on adapting a Hollywood hit paid off. First Star Wars radio drama drew 750,000 new listeners, many from the youthful demographic the network had hoped to capture. It was the biggest science fiction event on American radio since Orson Welles scared the country with his adaptation of H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds more than 40 years earlier. A broadcast produced by John Houseman, who in his capacity at USC's artistic directory in the 70s encouraged Toskin to bring radio drama back. In recent years, NPR's audience has continued to age while the Star Wars franchise has, in theaters, on television, and elsewhere, gone from strength to strength. Has the time come for radio to use the Force once again? I love every bit about this, so let's take a listen to it. the issue.
Star Wars, based on characters and situations created by George Lucas. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there came a time of revolution, when rebels united to challenge a tyrannical empire. But most of the citizens of that vast empire of a million star systems took little notice of this tremendous conflict, at least at first. On the desert planet Tatooine, as on countless other worlds, life goes on while great events are shaping the future of a galaxy. Here, amid the endless sands and the dune seas, the hostile wastes and barren lands, human beings struggle and endure. And here, too, men and women laugh and cry, hope and dream.
Yes, that's fantastic. Are you kidding me? I want to listen to that whole thing right now. I need a 14-hour road trip. Who's with me? We're listening to this radio drama of Star Wars. What an exciting time. I am in love with production, and I love that they had the John Williams music. They had a different way of setting up the stage. That is just super, super cool. So definitely look for the links in the show notes to catch the radio drama. I love it so much. That is fantastic. Hope you enjoyed it. Now let's move on to some Mandalorian news. It just appears that everybody's in the Mandalorian. But now we have an interesting piece. So we discussed last week that Timothy Oliphant would be in the Mandalorian. But now, some smarty pants who have picked up on some interesting details think that Timothy Oliphant will wear Boba Fett's iconic armor in The Mandalorian Season 2. And if you're a little confused by that and how that could actually happen, well, we have to look for the Aftermath series. So I'm not going to actually read this article. I'm sort of just, it's a reference point for me, but I did pull it from slashfilm.com. Peter Shredda, who is, you know, for me, slashfilm.com is not exactly reputable, but they've gotten things right time and time and again, so they're on the, they're getting to the positive side of this. WeGotThisCovered.com, still negative for me, but we will be using an article from them just for some fun discussion. So Timothy Oliphant will be wearing Boba Fett's iconic armor in The Mandalorian, as this is Memorial Day. So fireworks are going off in the background, so I apologize if the microphone's picking up on that. I want to make sure the house is still quiet. Yep, it is. Okay. And, of course, we're recording very, very much live, so we do the best we can with that. Now, will he be Boba Fett? No. Not according to this. We don't know what happened to Boba Fett, right? Boba Fett fell into the Sarlacc pit. We didn't even know his name until Return of the Jedi. When blind Han Solo says, Boba Fett, where? And hits him in the back of the jetpack, goes off, and he slams and boom. That's the end of that character. But apparently he survived, according to Chuck Wendig's Aftermath series. There's a character in the Aftermath series, and I am going to pull that character's name from this article, and that character's name is Vanth, first name Cobb, Cobb Vanth, and he is sort of a sheriff of a small town on Tatooine, I think. It's a settlement called Freetown, and he... Basically, and I'll just kind of, I will read this because it just makes a little bit more sense. Timothy Oliphant is playing an enigmatic character named Cobb Vanth, introduced in Chuck Wendig's Aftermath book series. Vanth is the self-appointed sheriff of the Tatooine-based settlement Freetown. He wears a mysterious set of Mandalorian armor that was acquired from Jawas, who scavenged the wreckage of Jabba the Hutt's sail barge shortly after the events of Return of the Jedi. As you may recall, that was the site of the battle where Bubba Fett was thrown into the Sarlacc pit on Tatooine's Dune Sea. It's assumed that the Mandalorian armor purchased by Vanth is none other than the infamous green armor formerly worn by one of the galaxy's most notorious bounty hunters, Boba Fett. Now, one, I hope this is true. All right? They're going to take a character. So the cool thing about Aftermath, Chuck Wendig wrote a trilogy called Aftermath, and it's stories that happens after the Empire falls. The Aftermath. And it's sort of like little interludes. There's this main storyline, but in between each of the storyline is these little interludes is showing you what's happening in the galaxy. It is one of the main books that got me all in on the Star Wars universe again when The Force Awakens was announced. And I haven't read it since 2015. It's been a while. I don't know all the details. It's one of those things. But I love when they pull a character from a book and put him into live action and make those connections, and it's so cool to see that happen. So here's what I don't like. I don't like that there's leaks and rumors on the Mandalorian Season 2, and it's like, can anybody keep a secret? What is going on? Can we just get to October so we can all be surprised? That's my biggest gripe right now when it comes to the Mandalorian, and I think other people share my sentiment there. So hopefully the rumors stop. And big shout out to MattVader74 for the follow on Twitch, going live on the podcast. Thank you very much. And it's pretty cool, but let's ease up on the rumor mill. Please, let's ease up on the rumor mill. Speaking of rumors, and let's continue down the lines of rumors. We got this covered, not my favorite website, but we all know it. We all feel it. Will Samuel L. Jackson return to Star Wars as Mace Windu? I put it out into the ether and got some comments from different people on Instagram and at different people on Twitter, and I just want to read some of this stuff. So David44D says, what? Riley WCSW says, I'm all for it. He's a bad mother. ... Shut your mouth. M. Cassini says, let dead dogs lie. Let's shift to another time period. Dupree721 says, I'm for it. Cool. To get more backstory on the character. And Clone Captain 27 says, unlimited power, which is from Revenge of the Sith, of course. Now, where do I fall on it? I think it's plausible that Mace Windu could have survived a fall, only getting his hand chopped off, getting hit with lightning. If Maul can survive getting cut in half down a shaft and survives, there's no reason why Mace Windu couldn't survive. Now, of course, he could come back in flashback, or he could make a brief cameo in the Kenobi series. There's a lot of things that could happen. I think it doesn't have to be a full-fledged, you know, five-episode arc, but I think it could be something awesome, you know, just a nod to the fans, like, you were right all along, I'm still alive, and I'm out there, and I've been watching. Now, the problem, of course, with reintroducing characters from the prequels into, say, The Mandalorian, which happens before the original trilogy, is that you have that ripple effect of, well, Mace Windu would be alive during the original trilogy. Why didn't he help? Mace Windu would be alive during the sequel trilogy. Why didn't he help? Then they would have to close that thread, and that, you know, it could lead down. It could be a problem. Would it be cool? Sure. It would be hella cool. But would it be the right thing to do for the Star Wars universe? I don't know. Would I like it? Yes. I like mostly everything when it comes to any of the decisions that they decide to make. But, you know, Mace Windu sort of got a bad rap. He got He got trickeried. He got betrayed, you know. Does he get a chance to atone for that? Maybe he turns into a bad guy. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. I have no idea. And our final new segment for segment 21.1. Let's talk about new tech. Disney files patent on highly calibrated AR lightsaber experience possibly connected to Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser at Walt Disney World, reported on May 23rd, 2020, WDWNT.com. Pretty reliable source. I've looked to this a lot for different Disney news and the Disney parks. I'm really obsessed with the Disney parks. There's a patent. There's a screenshot of the patent. It sort of really looks like that Jedi Challenges experience by Lenovo, I think, created it. And it was like $80, and I can get it for like $20. And it's got like goggles that go around you. It comes with the lightsaber hilt and like some little thing out front that sort of projects this whatever to you. But this patent, granted May 19th, is for the calibration of a, ready, magnetometer, I don't know, within a device used as part of an augmented or virtual reality game. The system would use a plurality of measurements in gameplay to help determine a magnetic field and calibrate the device while offsetting the magnetic bias in the magnetometer. In more simple terms, with this new system, people using an augmented reality device may not have to undergo an intense calibration before gameplay, like completing a motion before the game actually begins, as the calibration may be incorporated within the gameplay itself. So if this is for the Battlestar Cruiser, I think it's being linked to like the lightsaber dojo or some kind of experience in your room or some kind of experience in a Jedi training area. I know that, like, I've worn VR headsets. I have a VR headset, Oculus Rift S. It works very well. The Vader Immortal games are very good. They don't really have tracking issues. I'm assuming that Disney's going to dump money into this project, which means that it's going to be virtually awesome. And with the augmented reality, though, it's a lighter headset with a little, I guess, a piece of glass across your eyes that you can see stuff that's through your lenses there, but it's not really there, but you can see your environment. So I'm wondering if it'll be wireless. So you'll be walking through rooms with the lightsaber, right? And you, obviously your lightsaber won't have a, you know, a hilt. Maybe they'll have something on it to sort of replicate the weight, but it won't be there, but it'll be there in your glasses. So as you're maybe walking through rooms, you're actually seeing it track through your glasses. I did the Void's Star Wars experience, Empire Dreams, I forget, down in Orlando. And it was a collaborative experience where you wore a tactic vest, a helmet, and you had a, you know, a gun. And it was all VR. And you walked through rooms, and you were untethered, and it was the best VR experience I've ever had. About 30-minute experience. You could see your fingers flex. You could see the gun going left and right. It was deadly accurate. It was very cool. I highly recommend it. You know, people complained about it, and it's like, do you know what's going into this engine to render the pixels as you decide to move left and right? And you can't see that because it's, you're listening, but you could see it if you're watching me on Twitch. It's pretty amazing, the technology. So it's like, let's give them kudos. So they have to make this AR lightsaber dojo easy enough for anybody to pick up and do. So the patent is basically a calibration technique. So, you know, you're going to have different heights of people. You're going to have different sizes of people. You're going to have different styles that people want to do. It's supposed to calibrate to the person as fast as possible. And I think that's pretty cool. I'm sure more information will come out of that as construction has ramped back up in that the hotel area for that. I know one day in the future I will book a stay at that hotel. I don't know if it'll be with my family. I think it'll be with a friend, you know, who wants to experience the Star Wars universe with me. But that is definitely a must-do coming down the list. So thank you, Matthew Soberman from WDWNT.com. That'll be in the show notes, so you can check that out for yourself. But that sort of wraps up our hyperspace spot for segment 21.1. Thank you for listening in to this segment. And as they say in a galaxy far, far away, make sure you check out segment 21.2 coming later this week. And may the Force be with you. Star Wars by MRC Tech, created by Sean, found on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, can be streamed from MRCTechLLC.com. Follow Sean and MRC Tech on all the socials. Search out MRC Tech and you will surely find them. Catch all the exciting Star Wars action in a podcast form, but don't forget, MRC Tech also streams content like games and Lego builds and is also a tech specialist. Reach out if you ever need help. Music provided by Incompetech, the Baltic House Orchestra, Pandemics, and ChillHop.com. Copyrighted 2020. Cheers, and may the Force be with you.